Welcome to Teaching Writing, Ideas and Strategies. My name is Roger Graves. Today I'm talking with Tyler Cawthray, who's at the University of Southern Queensland, where he's an associate lecturer and learning advisor. Now, back in the spring, I did three different podcasts on academic integrity. One was called Academic Integrity Online. Another one was called Take Two. What are some more information or questions that came up about that? And the third one was how to talk to students about academic integrity. Tyler's been doing some really interesting work working with students after they've had that interview with an instructor talking about what happened, what went wrong. In the next 30 minutes or so, we'll listen to what he's been up to and how he's been able to help students move beyond that conversation. You work directly with students.
My role involves working directly one-on-one with students. So I usually work with students around study skills or academic literacy development more broadly. So that can be writing, task analysis, those sorts of things. And it does intersect with academic integrity. But in this specific pilot, I had about, I think I saw close to 40 students, each for about 30 to 45 minutes each, all in the space of a single month. So my average consultations went up about 600% a month. So it was a lot, and there was a bit of admin as well. I guess these sessions, I consciously thought about them before going in and wrote up a bit of a script of sorts, step-by-step process to follow to make sure I was covering off on what we thought the students would need to know. They all sort of followed the same trajectory in that initially I would explain my role as being there to offer support and educate students and talk to them about academic integrity, that my role wasn't to determine what had happened in terms of the investigation. The university had already done that work, but rather now to explore what would happen next. I then asked the students, I then talked to why the university wanted them to see me, in that we want them to succeed within their program, we want them to move past this, learn from this and continue working through and, you know, graduate and work through the remainder of their studies. After that point, I then asked them to give me their account of what happened. That was done intentionally as a way of giving them voice within this setting as well, because they all tend to be very quiet and initially and not very forthcoming, because by this point they've had a finding. We would then talk through what they thought had happened, and I'd then respond to that accordingly. For the most part, I guess I got mixed responses. Some admissions, I did the wrong thing. Others sort of admitting to something that they would be willing to admit to things like colluding behaviours, but not contract cheating behaviours, for example. So it was a little bit odd in that they're both just as serious as each other from the perspective of the university, but that was interesting. And then some that didn't admit any guilt at all. That was fine. Again, that wasn't my role to determine that. I would then go through and explain to them the specific forms of academic misconduct or academic integrity and what was and wasn't allowed and why that was the case. And during that those explanations in particular, I would talk to why it was a problem for them and why it was a problem for employability and why it was a problem for their qualifications overall if they engage in that behaviour, in that it was a case of, you know, the university sets assessments for you to do, so you can test your skills, your knowledge. If you don't complete those assessments, or if you get assistance you're not supposed to complete those assessments, if they're individually set, then you can't have confidence as a student in your abilities to perform the things that you're supposed to be able to do. And if you do that as a pattern of behaviour at the end of your degree, then how can you be sure that you can do what you need to do when you go out looking for work? How can employers have confidence in your qualification, for example? Raises a whole host of, confidence and competency issues for the students themselves as well. So,
in listening to you for a couple of minutes there, things that I haven't heard before was that the aspect of the employability, mm-hmm. and then also what I thought made an impression on me was the idea that the students themselves aren't building up the confidence in their own performance ability.
Well, yeah, and that was a very conscious choice that I would try to talk to them about it in that particular way, in that I guess my familiarity with some of the research in this area is and broadly my background is in criminology as well, is that pure deterrence or punitive approaches aren't going to really fly. The student engages in these behaviours often for their own personal reasons, whatever they may be. It might be family pressures, it might be time pressures, otherwise. They make a choice to engage in these behaviours, commit academic misconduct. The way I thought to appeal to them is, well, let's appeal to their personal circumstances. Why are they at university? Well, at the end of the day, they want a qualification and they want to go out and get a job, most likely. Speak to why it's a problem for those specific things.
Again, I'm really struck by the fact that you have a criminology background, which is not, I don't think, normal. My limited, very, very limited understanding of criminology and recidivism is that a pure punitive is not the way to go. And so I was real interested that you're bringing that in here.
Well, wouldn't it make sense that you're talking about a rules-based order within a university? Rules are similar in the way they function to law, so there's certainly elements that can be drawn on from criminology in terms of, well, how do you deal with this? And the aim of the university is ultimately for these students to succeed. So and just slapping them with some sanctions and telling them don't do it again doesn't do them a great service in that, well, we've got to make sure that they understand what's happened and be quite explicit about that and why it's happened and what the university's found and so on as well. Some of my discussions centered on talking about they would give their explanation and then I would talk to their explanation and around that specifically as well.
Yeah, because it's really about the way forward, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was, I guess, fed into the next part of these sessions, which would be to discuss the services available that they can access and use to move forward. So the most common questions was obviously, well, what does this mean for my grades? What is this? What are the potential outcomes here? I'd ask them to explain around some of these students had multiple breaches in a single semester. So it was a case of discussing, well, what does one major finding mean, what is two, and so on, and what the consequences of each of those were, and things like, students being offered supplementary assessments or failing courses or those sorts of things, and how they would then approach that. I spoke about supplementary assessments at USQ, for example, specifically because if students under USQ policy still manage to achieve 45% in the course, even with an assessment failed because of this, they could potentially apply for a supplementary assessment or be invited to do another assessment and still pass the course overall. So
that's interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure how widespread that would be, but that's an interesting policy.
I think it's relatively common in Australian universities in that if students... Supplementary, it's a general policy used for if students have, they achieve 45% in all their assessments. It doesn't have to be related to academic integrity. But in this specific case, on a first offence, usually students would be failed on the assessment. On a second offence, they would be failed for a course. So if on a first offence they're failed for the assessment and they still achieve 45% in their other assessments, they would be offered a supplementary.
Yeah, that sounds reasonably similar to what we did at the University of Alberta. So I think it probably is more widespread than I was initially thinking. What other services then were available to them?
One of them is myself. So as learning advisors based within the library, students can come and talk to us about book consultations to talk about their study skills, their assessment and so on. And we will frequently go through and help students around task analysis, understanding what they do have to do, give them feedback on academic writing, all those sorts of things, and academic integrity issues. So that's one. We also have librarians that we work very closely with that assist students around the technical aspects of referencing, finding information. In addition, we've got health and wellbeing counselling services. That was a particularly important one to highlight. Lots of these students were going through pretty stressful circumstances because of COVID. And as a result of that, highlighting, well, we've got free phone counselling services that you should be taking advantage of, even if you just want to talk to somebody about how you're feeling and how you manage stress, anxiety, those sorts of things. In addition to that, assistance around enrollment, because a lot of these students had questions around grades and enrollment. So we have student support or student relationship officers that help students with their enrollment going forward, because some of these students would have to repeat these courses. And when they would do that, because of offering timings, those sorts of things, and also obviously referring them back to their course examiners or their professors, in particular, because a lot of the conversations I had were, well, I didn't know I could ask for an extension, or I didn't know I could ask for a deferred exam given my circumstances. They would explain, you know, significant medical issues or family problems or pressures. Some of these students, you know, international students, family pressures at home because of COVID. And usually my response would be, well, did you talk to your professor about it? Because if you did, you'd likely would have qualified for an extension with a little bit of documentary support. And most of them, at least a portion of them, weren't aware of that. I guess that would be the sum of the support areas. The other one was smart thinking as well. So the 7 online tutoring platform that USQ uses as well.
So after you said you work with 40 students in about a month.
Yep. And so, yeah.
So that was a pilot program?
It was. So it's a pilot. I'm writing up a report at the moment. I've presented to one of the other schools around it. It's something that we'd be looking to expand in the future, but as of yet, there's no plans to do that just yet. And I think that's mainly because of timing. This all happened in November. It's now December, and Christmas is right around the corner. So possibly in the new year, some talk about that.
So if somebody wanted to know what you are finding or reporting in that report, they could contact you.
Yeah. So, yes, I'd be happy to talk to what we found as well. So,
any hints at what you found?
All of these students were part of a single cohort, or one to two cohorts. They all engaged in relatively similar behaviors, so it was a cluster. We're all sort of picked up through this investigation involved, you know, ICT and a bunch of different areas at our university. And partly as a result of that, we've now got an academic integrity unit set up as well. I think they all benefited anecdotally from the counselling sessions, in that they actually had somebody to talk to after this had occurred. The majority of them appeared to feel better after having these conversations, in that they now had a sense of, well, what happens next? And they felt that, okay, and I guess the messaging at the start was all about, let's make sure these students feel like they have options, that this is serious, but it's not the end. I think that the message was successfully conveyed. We'll have to see once I finish the report and we survey or talk to these students some more as well.
Yeah, so the situation is recoverable, is what I'm hearing. What I'd really be interested in knowing is if you could possibly do any kind of longitudinal work, so a year from now, if there's any way to check in on them.
Yeah, I'd have to do research ethics.
Yeah.
I guess it's, you know, academic integrity is a pretty tricky subject. We've discussed that with stakeholders, but it would require pretty high level approval. Mm-hmm. For me to pursue a longitudinal research. Now, that's not to say there won't be other opportunities to do the same. I think this pilot came together in about 2 months. There was a problem. I said something in a meeting and they went, okay, let's do some stuff. So it came together pretty quickly. So I'd say we're going to continue piloting it. And we'll probably pilot it with another cohort and a larger group, and then possibly look to do some research from the next iteration of that, as we refine some of what we've done. I guess it'll probably remain internal for the moment, but with a view to doing something more substantive and publishing research later as we do it more expansively.
Yeah, I was thinking of even something as simple as checking, are they still enrolled a year from now?
Yeah, well, yeah, that would probably be easy enough to do.
It would be something anyways, but I think the more extensive stuff would be great too. Maybe a few case studies, something like that.
Yeah. Well, there's some, you know, the initial discussions I had around Thoughts for Research came from my criminology background, which was, well, one of the stakeholders made a comment throughout all of this that it was almost as if the students that had engaged in contract cheating behaviors, it was almost a bit like romance fraud in that.
What?
Well, so the romance fraud, usually it's, you know, somebody on the end from some international country sits there and butters up the person. It's a bit like those Nigerian prince scandals or those Nigerian prince scams, sorry, in that, you know, people send emails or messages. It'll be on a dating site or through some other forum and they'll prey on the vulnerable. And I'll say, okay, you know, I love you, these sorts of things. They spend quite a bit of time building up their relationship, say, I want to meet you, things like that. And then they ask them for money, to extort money from them. And these people, because they've built up trust with this fraud stuff, they give them thousands of dollars, sometimes quite large sums of money. So in the academic integrity space, the contract cheating organizations, their staff, if you will, for lack of a better term, they approach students, or they might approach via former students as well. They'll talk to them as if they're their friends, their family, their cousins. Some of them, they may come from similar countries if they've got international backgrounds, and they may be able to speak in ways that makes them familiar, makes the student comfortable, and therefore it'll be things like, you know, oh, don't worry about it, it's not that serious, you know, I'm just here to help. You know, if you give me some money and some time, I'll do your assessment for you.
I see. Okay.
So it's lulling them into that that sense of safety, so they're accessing inappropriate support from outside the university, obviously in ways that they're not allowed to do. And therefore they go there because it's comfortable, it's safe, and it doesn't seem like a big thing, when in fact they should come and see somebody like me to talk about, well, how do I approach my assignment and do it myself, as opposed to I'm really stressed, I just need somebody to help me write my assignment. So.
Well, thanks for listening. I've been talking to Tyler Cawthray of the University of Southern Queensland. He's an associate lecturer and learning advisor there. To contact him, email tyler.cawthray@usq.edu.au. Thanks for listening.